welcome to this episode of FTK Over the Air. I believe, Lynn, we are on episode 14, so we are just getting started. And
sounds about right.
Yeah. This episode is a little different for a couple reasons that we'll talk about. But I know we did our episode with Matthew Wharton of ICAC on location, but we were using cell phones. We just had laptops set up in the lobby. We tried to take it up a notch with this one. And we met with Amanda Fields, who's now working with Blue Cross Blue Shield. And we met with Chris DeLeon, who works with Texas Central Bank and their former law enforcement. And what we ended up talking about, which is kind of interesting, Lynn, we did not go into the episode with that kind of plan. It just kind of evolved into that topic. And I think the content turned out really well. They had a lot of cool things to say, but I need to apologize to them, to myself, and to the listeners. So one of the things that I try to do,
you're on an apology tour.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Every YouTuber, every social media person needs their apology video or whatever. So what I try to do, and Lynn knows this, is when I approach like, hey, we want to do this cool thing. We want to do YouTube. We want to do a podcast. We'll try to approach it with free options, open source options at the front. So for example, Lynn and I started this podcast actually recording on Discord because there's some free plugins and it's a free chat thing, and proved the concept to Bill, who is the CMO here at Xtero, and full shout out to Bill and Xtero. They're willing to support us in what we do. So once we did that, we went to Xtero, we went to Bill and said, hey, we need a platform to up our quality. We need an official podcast thing that we can feel comfortable inviting people to, and that's going to have the features that we want. And they're like, you're absolutely right. So we got,
we could have either been fired or revered at that point.
Yeah.
It was a toss up.
Yeah.
You're either going to say, you're too much of a diva. Just, we're going to part ways. You guys are ridiculous. Or, yeah, this thing's going pretty well. Let's go ahead and get you set up.
That's exactly it. And so they got us set up with Riverside, which is our hosting platform that we use now. We're really happy with it. It's got a lot of cool features. It clears up a lot of stuff. I think it's a lot better. Then we had that episode with Matt there at the ICAC conference, and it went really well. And again, doing stuff with free, whatever we had on hand, cell phones, laptops, saying, hey, look at this cool on location thing that we can do. It was a lot of fun. Matt had a good time. It was great. So then I went back to Bill and I was like, Bill, this was cool. I think people liked it. I know our guests did. It was a lot of fun. Can we have proper microphones and kind of a setup here that we can set up? And ever grateful for Bill, he's like, yes, that sounds like a cool thing. So we got that. So then
we're taking the show on the road.
Yeah, exactly. So this podcast, this episode, episode 14, Dan Sumter and I are going down to Dallas, Texas, and we're going to meet with Amanda and Chris. And I'm like, hey, we've got this new setup. We've got the hardware anyway. So then again, I'm trying to figure out how to do multi-mic, multi-track audio recording for free because I want to prove the concept to Bill and those so that I can justify the business expense. Well, I'm not an audio visual. I'm a forensic guy who is now teaching himself the world of podcasting and YouTubing. And I'm going to be real with you, Lynn, my audio, my mic, something was configured wrong. Something input wrong. I was getting caught up in some other mic. My audio sounds like I'm a robot.
It sounds like you were stuck outside the building looking in through the window while they were all inside the building recording the podcast. And you were like, hey, guys, I'm just going to be outside joining your podcast.
I know.
Don't mind me. I'm just sitting out here out in the world, you know, trying to talk through the window. So it's a little weird. But you know what? Everybody listening, after about 60 seconds, you don't even notice it anymore. Just go with it.
Yeah. And fortunately, it's just my mic for not, like 90%. Like everybody else's mic comes through clear. So it's like, I sound like a robot. Then they come in perfectly clear. And I don't know what went down, but we had, and again, to Xtero's credit, to Bill's credit, I said, hey, this was a good thing. They really enjoyed it. They wanted to do it again. I need this piece of equipment now to prevent that from happening. And they hooked me up. So we're going to have a lot more on location recordings with different guests. So hit us up at conferences and stuff. I'm going to try to be taking our setup when we go. Yes. You can reach out to us. Yeah. You can reach out to us at ftkovertheair@xtero.com. If you're going to be at a conference and you want to sit down and chat about what you got going on, about forensics, whatever, let's set it up. Let's make it happen. Because I'm always looking for cool new stuff. And I think Lynn loves cool new stuff. So it just like meshes, it works together. So
totally.
So that's my
disclaimer. It's exciting. It's
yeah.
We're here and I think we bring some interesting topics to the table, but gosh, nothing compares to having live guests that are out in the field doing the work, literally, you know, law enforcement folks, private sector folks, you know, people who are using our tools and doing all the forensic things. People would much rather hear from them anyway. So yeah, we're taking it on the road. We're working out the kinks. No worries. We'll get it. And this week was really cool. This conversation was really fun because it's like, what happens when you go to the other side of the fence, right? Oh, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, isn't it? Doesn't matter what industry you're in. But you always wonder like, what will it be to, you know, what will it be like to be on the other side? It looks greener over there. And it is different. So these folks that we had on our podcast this week, came from public sector work and then had to move to private sector. And gosh, it's a lot different. You did the same thing. Dan did the same thing. So it's kind of a neat conversation for you guys to all compare notes, on what happens when you want to move again from the public side to the private side, still doing forensics, but it's different. The same, but different.
Yeah. I will say, even though I am former law enforcement, did all these investigations, Dan, Chris, and Amanda were in it for much longer periods than I was. So it was more of a way of life for them, more of a, just who they are to transition. So, it was a lot harder for them and it was really cool to see them kind of riff off of each other. Similar experiences, similar feelings and thoughts when they jumped. And I think it'll be helpful to others as they reach the end of, say, public service and want to continue to do forensics, or they even actually talk about kind of going the other way as well. And so a lot of good stuff there.
As with any topic in life, the more we talk about it and the more we share, the better it gets. And you hopefully, again, if you're one of those people that's like, gosh, I'd sure love to make the jump, or I just made the jump and I'm struggling, or I made the jump a long time ago and it would be really fun to hear, you know, their perspective versus my perspective. So no matter where you are in your journey in forensics, I think you'll get something out of this week's conversation.
I agree. So let's get over to it. What do you think, Lynn?
Yep. Sounds good. Everybody remember, Justin is in a tin can recording. It's not, it's just yeah. Go with it. It's fine.
It's fine. Leave comments on the video. Tell me what you thought. And if you are an audiovisual professional, then maybe send me an email on how I can make it better for sure.
Help us.
Help. Yeah. I am by no means above any sort of help. Tech we'll take or all otherwise. The tips. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. We're going to jump in. Thanks everyone. And we'll get to the content. So, Amanda, Chris, thanks for jumping in today and sitting down and talking with us. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Doing very well. Warm, but doing good.
Oh, doing great.
And we got the rain yesterday. We talked about a little bit earlier. Dan and I were here when it started raining, and we needed to get an Uber, but it was like super raining. It wasn't just like...
Yeah. We were stranded. There's no way someone was going
to
pick up.
No. So we waited for it to die down a little bit, and then there was a big crowd out in the lobby as well, so I think they felt the same.
It probably helped with surge pricing too.
Yeah, so we actually waited and then we didn't pay too much.
Yeah,
but that was
yeah
Probably helped us get into the restaurant we went to.
Yeah. Where'd y'all go?
It was a Mexican place. Hacienda.
Yeah, I don't
I'll
know.
Look.
La Hacienda Ranch.
It was good, though.
Yeah, it was good. I was so stuffed.
Yeah. So.
Even they get you with those chips.
That's how they get you.
If you're in Texas, you got to get Mexican food, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's what we were thinking.
Yeah.
And barbecue. I'll get barbecue.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. We're not here to talk about food, though. We can, though.
I'm starving.
But we have Amanda and Chris, both with, it sounded about 15 years of law enforcement each, and you're now working in the private industry.
That's correct.
So Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yes.
And Texas Capital Bank, right?
Correct.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about, and we'll start with you, Amanda, what position are you working there and kind of your day-to-day?
Sure, yeah. So currently I work in their cyber defense and investigations part, and it's broken down into several different sections, but I work in digital forensic services, which is a lot of fun, and it transitions a little bit from my law enforcement days, but it can also be very different. We do things a little bit differently, but definitely exciting, but not to the same level as before.
Yeah, a different type of it.
Yes, for sure.
Right. Chris, what about you?
So I'm in cyber defense as well. I lead our cyber threat intelligence team, insider risk team, and then do digital forensics as well. So good kind of stepping off point from law enforcement into this world, and I'm loving it.
So in that, let's kind of address that, because Dan, also former law enforcement for a long time, I was former law enforcement, but not as many years as you guys all have in. What was some of the transition between moving from law enforcement-based investigations to that kind of private enterprise side investigations?
For me, it was a big change. So things are run quite differently than law enforcement, especially in law enforcement. If you want to move up at all, you kind of go backwards. So if you want to promote in law enforcement, maybe from a detective position, you get pushed back to patrol again and you get put on deep nights, and it doesn't really work that way in the corporate world. You can actually move up. And I also feel like that my knowledge got increased tremendously when I left law enforcement and moved to corporate, because now instead of just doing maybe dead box forensics, maybe a little bit of live triage in law enforcement at crime scenes and stuff, but now I do a lot more sort of dynamic analysis more, a lot of network intrusion related stuff, or forensics across the network.
Yeah, that data is coming to you through a tool. You're also not probably kicking down cubicle doors.
No, I don't get to kick down any cubicle doors.
Handcuffs? No.
None of that. No. I cannot say that I miss it either.
Yeah. No, I absolutely don't. I have to agree with you on that. And I think one of the biggest things for me was in law enforcement, from a digital forensics background and ICAC background, you know, ICAC being Internet Crimes Against Children, you were very much in a technical role and a non-technical background. And so there was a lot of times that you spent justifying your job and why it's needed, versus when you come into the corporate world under cyber defense, you are a technical person in a technical world, and they're there to support you. And I mean, you know, you hear, coming from law enforcement, you always worry about leaving law enforcement because it's that guaranteed job. I mean, you're a civil servant, and as long as you do your job, it's going to be there. There's no mass layoffs, things of that mind, of you're very much an at-will employee. And
yeah.
So you worry about getting out, but I honestly landed in a awesome position to where, I mean, we all work great together, and we're all trying to just build and learn and just do the great things. So I really lucked out, honestly.
So that was kind of a question I had on my mind immediately, and you already just jumped on it, the fear of leaving law enforcement, right? You know, because they, let's face it, they make you feel like you can't leave, you're trapped, right? And because of the pension, mm-hmm. and how hard it was to get the job. So yeah, I wondered if it was just as scary for everybody else as it was for me at the time, because you're like, once I leave, you know, if I try to come back, I might lose all my seniority. I might, you know, what's going to happen? I mean, technically, I still have my certification, and I volunteer at a local police department just in case, you know, because, like you said, I remember when Justin hired me, you know, I'm like, hey, can I have a 3-year contract? He's like, no. I was like, okay, well, this is going to be a scary thing because I have a wife and 4 kids and a huge mortgage. But like you said, in the end, it worked out. I do have one other question, though, you know, that you brought up is, how did you feel like once you went to corporate, did you feel like you were trained enough? Like, were you like, man, I don't know if I know how to do this job.
No.
No? So you were scared? So you're like, man, do they know I don't know anything?
Yeah. You know? That whole imposter syndrome is a real thing, for sure. And you go from being, like, at least in my agency, there for a while, I was the only examiner. And so I was like the smart technical person, and jump into a role with people that have done IT related fields their whole life, and you just feel really dumb.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I'm like, okay, I have some education, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be working for Justin, who has a master's degree in digital forensics. I'm like, there's no way this cop is even going to come close. I had a lot of studying to do, you know, so I always wondered if that was just me or if that's everybody, you know.
No, I mean, I think it's pretty common. It was the same way for me. It was from other, you know, former law enforcement that have now switched to the corporate side. I think that's kind of a commonality. But the other part, too, is you just look at things a little differently. I mean, like Amanda mentioned, is everything's so IT-related. Even when you go to the digital forensics, all these different tools that you're getting, it's not necessarily the raw data. It's not the dead box forensics of just getting the computer, having it in front of you. And so you have these people that have been in this role in the corporate world for years, and I mean, if you think about it, they probably feel the same way if they decided to leave and go into the academy in law enforcement.
Yeah, it's like, what do they know about investigations, right? I mean, maybe they're not going to turn over that thing that we see that's blatant.
Right.
That's
right.
Exactly true. The people that I work with as far as investigative mindset goes is totally different than what I did before. In law enforcement, you know, you're always just looking everywhere. And so I find myself Googling stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's just, sometimes you get your answer very easily that way.
Right.
And it's something that people don't think about because they're too busy digging in a tool as opposed to just maybe using.
I think that's a major benefit of hiring out of law enforcement. We're going to talk about another one here in a second. But there's a work ethic, yes, but a willingness to go find that answer, because that's literally what you've been doing your whole career. And like you mentioned, you kind of, whether you went to training when you got into the digital forensics field from a cop or whatever, a lot of it you had to teach yourself. You know, like, here's this 1-week course. Like, you went to OPATA for that week, and then it's like, all right, you're good, right? You're like, yeah, I learned everything that there is to know in digital forensics in 1 week. And so you get kind of an employee coming out of law enforcement, ICAC, a digital lab in general, coming into private that has the ability to teach themselves if necessary. And I don't know what the word I'm talking for, an ethic, a work ethic, that it's like, okay, this is a problem. They treat it like an investigation, like, oh, I'm on a timeline, I got to get this done. And they're used to, we were talking before we start hit recording, where with Dan, we had that crunch time with one of our classes, and you and I put in like an 80-hour week or whatever, getting this thing all finished and wrapped up. I'm like, you know, this is right when I hired him, so I was like, oh, I hope I didn't like push. He's
stretch
like,
you out.
Yeah, this was like every week or whatever. And so you have these employees that when they have to work an extra hour or two, it's like,
let's just have my contract.
yeah. Where, so I think you're getting a, even if you feel that way, I think you come in to that environment ready to roll, and you're picking things up faster due to the experiences that you've had. And you talked about the things you learned in ICAC, and we were talking before, you talked about communication. So let's talk about how you like to hire, or like to look at anyway. No guarantee you'd be hired, but you like to look at ICAC officers because of certain skills that they gained, even though you're not going to be working CSAM cases, right? Those instantly go back to law enforcement. But what were some of the attributes you liked out of the ICAC officers?
So, and like you said, I like to look at them, and a lot of it is law enforcement, for the most part, is not a technical field. And if you look at, everybody is competing for the same people. I mean, if you go to IT or go to information security, the same incident responders that worked for one company, they're trying to hire them to another company, and you only have so many people. So you're left with essentially either law enforcement or military to get your people who are trained, or you have somebody who's coming straight out of college who might have the certifications behind it, but maybe not the work experience. And you give them all a shot, but one just standard that I know from, you know, being in that world is you have somebody who has been in a technical field, in a non-technical world, so they can't just go to the person next to them and ask them how to solve a problem. They have to know how to go find the answer on their own. Somebody in that field, you're having to justify why you need things, right? And even in the corporate world, you have to justify why you need the manpower, why you need certain tools. Whatever the case may be, there has to be a business case behind it. And most law enforcement, you're not used to making the business case, because the business case is you're there to serve and protect. You're in patrol, or you're in a DBI squad, or narcotics.
They have a caseload that needs to be attended to.
Right. So. And even from the ICAC world, you don't always have to make a business case, because everybody knows you have to protect kids, right? It's an important part. But where it comes in is you have to make the business case for why do you need the digital forensics? Why do you need the advanced training? Because there are all these federal task forces that have regional labs and everything. And so you have to present statistics and say, well, I can either find the solution and, you know, catch this many people that are trying to offend against kids mm-hmm. in this amount of time, or I can do it in this amount of time. And the training of digital forensics, the other one is we're going to be at the mercy of whichever lab or other agency is doing it. And so that's honestly the same thing with corporate world of you have to justify why you're there, and you have to keep improving and keep finding solutions to innovative problems, right? Technology is always changing.
Oh, yeah.
You have to think about presentation skills, too, because in law enforcement, you're so used to having to have data to back what you're going to present in court, and you have to be able to explain that very technical information to a juror that doesn't have any technical knowledge whatsoever. And that really rolls in the corporate world too, when you're trying to put together presentations and back it with data. So that really translates over well.
No, absolutely. And the other part that it comes into is, you know, I mean, we were talking about earlier, when I left law enforcement going into it, when, you know, Amanda mentioned it, we knew the law enforcement digital forensic side of it, but we're switching to a new field. So there's going to be changes. Well, you have to have that ability to learn. And when you start looking at the ICAC folks, what are they having to do? Well, they're having to become essentially subject matter experts on how all these social media companies store their data and how to put it in a readable format when it gets back to you. What do cellular records mean, and how does it change from, you know, company to company, and how to do all those things. So, I mean, they're very much a jack of all trades that you have to become. And
that's crazy.
You have somebody that you know, even though they don't know
These are just cops.
Yeah.
Right? Later, you're our new forensic guy, right?
It's like, right.
What?
It's true.
Dan's got a pager. Look, he's going to be the new forensic guy.
Yeah, it's the person who could, you know, fix the printer.
Right,
yeah, exactly. New person. And, yeah, so, I mean, you get those, you know, former investigators in there, and you know that they have the ability to learn, because that's another important part is it's not that you know it, but can you learn it? And you do know they can learn it, because they've done it before, they've proven it. And like Amanda said, I mean, it's nothing like attention to detail and knowing how to communicate to a non-technical person when you've got somebody who had to do an investigation, and we all know what, 3-4 years later something's going to court and you're having to defend what you did 3 or 4 years later, and it's all based on how much attention and detail you provided in your reports.
There's nothing worse than going to court, and you got version 5 of something, and then when you go to court, it's like a new artifact. I'm like, yeah, it's possible. Then why didn't you do it?
Or the 3 years later when the prosecutor asks you to go back and redo the forensics with a new version. I'm like, do you know how long that took me? Like, this is not a 15-minute.
I always hated those return to cases, because even like within a year, 6 months, you look at your report and you're like, I could have probably got some more information on this. I know this new thing now. You're like, well, just
why
move on, you know? Like,
I did not list this. I would do it all the time.
Yeah.
Even
but, that. I didn't then. It sounds cliche, but one of the things, so I do a presentation every year to middle school girls on computer forensics. It's Gen Cyber. I go to the South Dakota location. And they the question they always ask is, what should I study or what should I be good at to get into digital forensics? And it's super cliche and a cheesy line, but it's learn how to learn. And because, like, if you go into the law enforcement world, yeah, do you know how to check email? Well, that's good enough to get you through the door, but that's definitely not good enough to do an investigation. And even if you, to the point of the courts and you're looking back at your report and the versions, you're constantly learning something new as the tech changes, social media changes, cloud repositories, apps, devices. I mean, cell phones, I can still remember you get these books of cables that you had to plug in, and half your cell phone forensics was trying to figure out which cable was plugged in.
T133, right?
What,
wiggling it properly?
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have to go find who took the yellow tip and is charging their phone. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that made me mad a few times.
Hold it just right. Try all your USB ports.
You balance it on a book.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's not so much the collection. Collection either happens or it doesn't. It's pretty binary now with the technology. Now it's like, okay, you've got 600 apps you pulled off of this and only 25 of them are supported, but you're looking for new social media app one, and well, you got to go figure out how to look at it, you know? And so learning how to learn is something that all law enforcement investigators really learn how to do. How was that transition to where it's just an ever flood of just cases? And I know it's not, you're not hurting for work, but it's kind of a different cadence, right? Once you go to private.
For me, it's really different because instead of it just being me trying to get everything done, I have this entire team of people, and it's split up a lot more. Before, I was everything. I was the examiner, and I was the detective, and I'm going to court, and I'm doing all of it. And now it's split up a lot more. You have a lot of people jumping in together and knowledge from so many different places that my part is way less. It's just a spoke in the wheel instead right. of the entire picture now. So that's, it's awesome. Different.
No, absolutely. I would agree with that. And it's so before I, after I left law enforcement, before I ended up at Texas Capital Bank, I spent a short amount of time at an MSSP doing the breach response, digital forensics for that. And it just happened that another couple of law enforcement officers were there with me, and we would joke there at the beginning of, you know, at Texas Capital Bank, I spent a short amount of time at an MSSP doing the breach response, digital forensics for that. And it just happened that another couple of law enforcement officers were there with me, and we would joke there at the beginning of, you know, it's kind of like an attorney where you're on retainer and you're just waiting for something to happen, and when it does, it's, you know, all hands on deck. But yeah. Then there's huge lulls where you might have a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks where you don't have anything to do, and we would joke, we would call each other and say, hey, have you heard for work in a week? Do we still have a job? I mean, do we still work there? We haven't heard anything in a week or two.
Yeah.
Checking the payrolls. Right. Do we get paid? And so, you know, that was the biggest thing. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I decided to make the switch back from the MSSP side to internally corporate side and found a home here at Texas Capital Bank is because you have a lot more skin in the game where you're protecting your own company. I mean, it's your own house now. Yeah. That you're protecting, you know, the same way that, you know, I'm sure Amanda feels about it. It is, you know, nobody's coming into my house. Nobody, you know, over my dead body is that going to happen, right? And at the other side, it's not that you don't care, but you're just responding and you're getting a piece of the puzzle. It's the other part, too, is from law enforcement, it's, we used to call it, you know, birth to earth, right? From the very beginning, the investigative part, all the way to the end, you knew everything going on. And you do a full investigation, and how in-depth you go is really up to how much time you have and the investigator, how
good they are at what they're doing and how thorough they are. Well, you switch to the MSSP side and it's, you have a single question you want answered. And the moment you answer that question, you're done, you're out, or whatever you reach the amount of whatever the money is that was paid, whenever that's done.
So you need to react and or protect that system. From the MSSP side.
Mm. Yeah, for internally, for the internal side, it's really just, I mean, it's a risk side, like you said, but not as much where you start weighing the monetary. It's risk of, you know, which is going to give us the, you know, most protection in the, you know, a lot of time that we really need it, right? And what's the best way of doing it that we're not going to have to redo it 10 times?
Gotcha.
And so, again, that's why, I mean, it depends on where you, like you said, you've seen it that way. It depends on where you work, right? Some companies, I'm sure, are, well, this is what it takes versus this. You know, where I haven't seen that, and, you know, I don't know about Amanda.
The other thing, too, is terminology. Like, when I first moved over, you know, it's like 800 acronyms for everything, right? And it's sort of like that in law enforcement, too, but I do remember hearing like red team and blue team acronyms for everything, right? And it's sort of like that in law enforcement too, but I do remember hearing like red team and blue team and thinking, you mean like cops and firemen? But it isn't like that, you know? And so that's another thing in the corporate world. I mean, they have red team, which is they have their own bad guys. And they get glorified, don't get me wrong. The ethical hackers, they get glorified. And I make fun of that and kind of joke with it because they have to find one way in. But blue team side, which does cyber defense, you have to find every hole instead of just one hole. So it definitely is a lot. And there's always something. There's always some new vulnerability coming out or some new exploit. There's always something new, and you're constantly behind the curve to try to fix it. Same as law enforcement.
So in your organization, you guys don't do outside penetration? Do you guys
we have our own
people?
Yeah, we have our own internal, and they do too.
That's cool.
Yeah, we have our own. I mean, like everything else, when you're in highly regulated fields, you'll have your own internal folks, but then you will have external folks essentially coming in and validating that you are doing what you're supposed to be doing, right?
Gotcha.
Whether you want to or not.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's the defense attorney 3 years later comes on the road and says, make sure you did what you did. But, you know, a lot more, you know, kind of.
So when did you think that when you transitioned over that you would be getting into that kind of stuff instead of, because you said your team's broken up into different elements.
For sure.
So, I mean, you have this forensics, you know, that, but now it's like, wait a minute, there's incident response, there's cyber defense, there's ethical hacking, you know, there's.
Yeah, so it is, for us, it's split up, but digital forensics is so much more than just getting a machine and imaging it. So, you know, I'm digging in a security tool and I'm looking for artifacts in there that I can tie back to another security tool that I can tie back to like a data lake so I can get raw data. And so you have a million tools that you have to piece together, kind of like how you would have in law enforcement when you just have a whole bunch of different clues that you would put together. It's sort of the same way. You're digging in your own world.
So when you get to, you get to a point where you're like, okay, now I'm outside my skill set. Is there
no?
Grab somebody and say, hey, let's pass this to you, or do you ask for help, or do you go to Google? Like, what
I
are
Google.
You doing?
I would say I Google first and ask later.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, you know, if I don't, you know, there's so many different coding languages, so you never really know what you're going to find when you start digging and stuff. And so, and there's so many different ways to encode things where you're trying to, you know, you're constantly trying to decode stuff that's in there, or you're just throwing a little piece of code into Google to be like, what comes back when I that, you know, look at code every day and I'm like, hey, what is this? But we always try to get it on our own before we ask for help.
So I bet, was it a positive adjustment when, because we talked about the whole cradle to grave, and you talked about spokes once you moved. And you're probably, was there this initial point where you're like, I've got to figure this out, and somebody was like, hold up, that's not your gig, just send it over?
So I run into that sometimes because I am investigating a security incident, period. And I was so used to doing it all. So when I start seeing people that maybe have like a policy violation, and they're like, you don't have to investigate the policy violation. Like, that doesn't matter. You just need to make sure that the security incident is handled. So yes, I run into that pretty regularly.
Yeah, it was kind of not in the security field, but so Axis Data got bought by Xtero. Axis Data was a very lean ship. Like, you know, we had no more people than we absolutely needed, so it was very much like, even though I was in training, I may have to help IT with I may have to do part of my own IT work in the training department or something. Then we came over to Xtero, and people were like, why are you, like, you don't have to do that. We have somebody that'll write that. And even within marketing, it was like, we have somebody that will build that graphic. You don't, you know. And so it was a transition in that way. I wondered if it was the same there, like, with the policy. Like, no, that's... We have another team for that.
Yes.
We just need you for this one little thing.
Yes. Yeah, I run into that pretty regularly. And our tools are always evolving, and we're always having to tune them and set them. And we have a whole section that does that, too. So you can find something that needs to be tuned, but you don't flip the switch. Someone else flips the switch. So it can be interesting.
Yeah, I think I had kind of the opposite reaction just in law enforcement, going from, you know, a large department with, you know, almost 3,000 officers there, and then plus probably 1,000 civilians, to where it's we have people that do individual stuff, to the last couple of years of my law enforcement career switching to a small department, and the first few months is and Amanda's laughing, I can see her face, is they'd say, well, you have to do this. I don't know how to do that. We had people that did that for us. I mean,
I forgot that.
Yeah. Story. What do you mean we have to do that? Right. You don't have somebody that comes and collects that for you?
Yeah, you had to do your own crime scene.
Yeah, and that was the biggest one, is when we had crime scene at my first agency, and you just got on the radio and called them out, and a tech came out and handled it all, and you let them handle it. They took it all back, and we're done. And then get to the smaller agencies, and it becomes, well, you got to do that on your own. I have no idea how to do that.
Right.
So, I mean, it was a little more norm for me when I got in the corporate world, of having that individual just from a bigger agency. So,
yeah, it is funny how they have different regulations or policies in the corporate world. You know, I remember making my first PowerPoint or something for training, and they're like, hey, you used the wrong font or the wrong color. I'm like, what? They got that? That's a thing? You know,
the 2022 version versus the 2021. Yeah, we changed the font.
And I remember at the police department, I was probably stealing, you know, somebody's product code number to make my office work, you know. Looking on the side of the computer to see if anybody's Windows 10 sticker was still on the side of their computer.
That's true. It's like, Google what free tool I can download
exactly.
Today.
Right. Now, and in this world, they're like, don't do that, don't do that, don't use that software. Go through IT, make a request, do this. Mm-hmm. We will test it. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's a different world for sure.
Yeah, you don't get to just throw whatever you want into a production network and hope it works. Like, that's kind of what we did with law enforcement. You just, like, download this tool, and I'm going to stick some data in there. Does that work? No? Okay, let's try something else.
Right.
Yeah, you don't really get to do that in the corporate world, because they just don't want to break everything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you have a responsibility to protect data.
Yeah.
So, you know, so you're not going to copy and paste somebody's account information into a Google Translate.
For sure.
Well, I think that plays an important thing, that relationship between law enforcement and private, though, is your attention to validation. Because you, even what we're joking here, you're like, put this data into this known data, you know, like, I have this test stuff here, let's put it in, does it work? No. Okay. And we would do that in law enforcement. You'd have this dummy data. Okay, does this work? No. Okay, now does this free tool work? No. But you would be going through all these free tools. The same happens here. Do you guys have validation teams, or are you required to validate your own stuff? How does that validation in the private side work out for you guys?
I validate my own stuff. We'll go out and get, so if I have something that I put into a tool and I'm not feeling comfortable with it, maybe if it was from an image or whatever, we'll go out and get the raw data and have to compare them. So I have to do my own tool validation. I don't know about you. Yours is maybe different.
No, we're the same way. Is we do our own tool validation for those type of things. Is known data set, or going out and getting the raw data, and that's kind of it's a little bit different too, right? Is
in law enforcement, you're doing the data validation off of a known data set a lot of times because you don't have access to all the raw data. Whereas in, I mean, the best way to do it is confirm, does your tool say X happened? Let's go look where the raw data is, and is that in fact happening? And so it's a different type of validation you can do when you actually have the keys to the kingdom, per se.
So I'm not going to ask you to, you know, throw yourselves under the bus then, but I know how often I validated my tools when I was in the police department. But let me ask, instead of asking you if you do it or not, do you do it more often than you used to, or is it about the same, or, you know, is it something more regular in your corporate world?
I have so many more tools that sort of, because, you know, it's all about defense in depth. So you have all these layers that you can go through. So, you know, maybe I have an email coming from a security tool that I had an alert on, and then I may use this tool to go to the email server to pull something, and then I may use, you know, my forensics tool to pull directly from the host that got the email. And so I have so many more tools that you can get the same data from, so it makes it a lot easier, as opposed to law enforcement where I had like one forensics tool and then
Fred or whatever.
Yeah, and then I just hope for the best. Yeah.
Okay.
How many mental gymnastics? Because so I went from forensics to teaching forensics. So my role has always been in, or I went from law enforcement forensics into teaching forensics, and primarily a lot of our customers were out of that law enforcement. We're kind of switching more into enterprise based, but it's my mentality is I've always got the image. It's always a full disk or a bit for bit. Do you have any like hang up, like, oh man, I got to trust what this tool gave me? How was that transition, or did you even have to go through kind of this settling to get over that fact?
Yeah, so I have a lot of that still, because when you're doing a remote collection across the network, it takes, you cannot pull a full image across the network. It just takes way too long. And so I'm thinking in my brain, you know, okay, so for this particular incident, what do I want? And I need to get very small pieces. And so, yeah, I'm like, oh, you know, maybe registry and some prefetch, and that's all you get. So you'll pull that and then, you know, maybe try to validate it with another tool, but you definitely don't get the full thing, and you're not getting deleted data ever. Yeah. So
one of my first classes I taught with this SEC guy, I was talking to him and he was saying that, and I just jumped out of law enforcement. I'm like, notify them? Like, could you imagine calling up the guy at the house?
Hey.
You're like, hey, we're going to be there tomorrow at 7 a.m. Don't delete anything. You know, and I don't know if you guys have to notify, but that aspect of it was just a shocker to me. How was your experience with that, where you're pulling data more in a less criminal environment, right? It's more protecting data, it's more compliance, policy, that sort of thing.
Don't notify. As a matter of fact, we typically, they'd never know that we were pulling data until after the fact. I don't know if you have to notify.
Once HR comes along, then it's already
basically over. Yeah. So we'll pull whatever we need. Don't get me wrong. If we're going to isolate their machine, like if we think there's something that's going to get out, they're going to figure that out pretty fast, and we're going to send them a message saying, hey, because they're probably going to be calling our help desk saying, I can't connect to the network.
Yeah.
So they'll get a message that says, hey, there's been some sort of security incident, and so your machine's been isolated from the network. And it's really quick. I mean, a lot of times they'll just immediately take the machine and give them a new one, and then you just move on. Mm-hmm. They move on. Anyway, it's fast for them.
Yeah. So for me, it's a little different. Since I wear a couple of different hats, I have to – it really depends on what we're looking at, right? Are we looking at a security incident where we're just pulling the logs to see if some threat actor has tried to enter our network or is in our network? Or are we, in those cases, I mean, we're not notifying, or sometimes we might just call somebody and say, hey, did you actually do what the tool is saying you're doing? So we can see, is this actually you doing it? The other side is if it's something where we believe it is malicious, or even it's not malicious, it's somebody that's breaking some type of policy that creates some risk for our environment, then we're not going to notify them. We're going to do the investigation, kind of determine the root cause of it, and then essentially we do handoffs similar to law enforcement where we didn't make the decision, we just gathered the facts. And in the corporate world, you hand it off to, for us, it's HR, and HR makes the determination of, you know,
So you don't get to sit down and do the interviews. That's what's, because that was, you know, working ICAT cases, right? Every single guy I ever sat down, I don't know how it is in the corporate world. I don't know if they actually sit down and tell on themselves, or they don't even need to because either they're fired or they're not, right? So.
Yeah, we don't do the interviews for us. Our incident response team does the interviews. We'll help out a little bit. We'll pull data and be like, hey, these are the questions you may want to talk to them about. And so usually it's just like in law enforcement, they know the answer before they ask the question, and they just want to see if they're going to own up to it or not.
That's what I miss. I just miss those interviews. Oh, yeah. Man.
Where you're sitting out front and talking in the front of the car and their computer's getting walked out in front of the car as they're looking
it's like
at
you
it.
You just want to tell me what's going on, man.
Yeah.
I worked at home before COVID. Like, that's just, so nothing really changed for me. With your organizations, pretty much every organization at some point sent a lot of people home. I don't know if you're coming back, but how did that impact how you're regulating and monitoring your network? And
everything's going to the cloud. That's the best way. And a lot of I feel like it's going old school, like, because there's a lot more thin clients now. You know, people are just getting like a very, you know, basic machine, and then they're just remoting into the machine that they would use for work. And so I would say a lot of it's in the cloud. For me, I work, they consider me hybrid, but I'm primarily at home, and I can do everything but an actual physical disk image from my house. So it's nice, actually.
So the equipment you have at home, is it as robust as it was at in your police lab, or are you logging into another computer that could do that stuff?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm logging in. I have a forensic machine that I log into. So yeah, I mean, I'm still connecting in, and we still have our server and all the same things. Kind of like, well, I actually didn't get to have a server in law enforcement. We were too poor, but but yes. Yeah, so I do access my forensic machine from home.
I was part of the MSSP, and so we were doing remote collections for customers anyway, and so all of our stuff was work from home, remote. Now with Texas Capital Bank, leadership is in-office environment, and then our actual like subject matter experts, they have a hybrid environment.
What about your end users or your clients or your people? Outside of the security teams, has it impacted your ability to respond to them, or did you guys have to change the way you looked at protecting your network because they have been sent out?
That's actually a really good question.
So I think you definitely have to look at it differently because a lot more, I mean, you heard everybody talking years ago about two-factor authentication, mm-hmm. MFA, turning it on, and some did it, some didn't, not a big deal, or when you're in, everybody's in office, they're connected to an actual port on the network. Well, when you're not, you start worrying about VPN connectivity, and you start, MFA becomes a very, very important thing, single sign-on, so you're not having to type in all these passwords that are then cached in your browser, right, that somebody gets through a vulnerability of Google, gets to dump all the cached passwords and now access them, things like that. So those type of things become even more important. The old way of doing it is, for the most part, getting in, all the people who were logging into all these tools and all the files, it was easy to tell. I don't want to say easy, but there weren't as many people external to your business that were trying to log into all this stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Now,
you
might have the entire workforce that's logging in from all of these different IP addresses everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a lot more important of just knowing and being able to control who's actually... Who they claim to be, right?
Imagine all those event logs. You know, you normally, before all that COVID stuff, your event logs for remote connections were minimal, and now it's
everybody.
It's everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
man, how do you keep track of that?
Learn how to grep search. That's how I do it. Like, you have to. We just have this huge amount of data, and you definitely, I would say in corporate, not as much in law enforcement, but you definitely have to become more Linux friendly in a law enforcement environment. In a corporate environment, because that's what most servers are. And data is stored like in a very raw format. You know, it's not all nicely parsed out for you like your forensic tool does. And so you learn how to use command line a lot more often because it has to be quick. You can't, wait around as long.
Yeah, I mean, I would say not just Linux, but servers, period.
I mean, you got to learn about,
probably 98% in the ICAC world you're dealing with is cell phones and actual home computers or a laptop from a business. If you walked into somebody who had a home server, you knew that was a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you walk in, there's just wires everywhere, and I'm calling in sick.
We've had a few of those.
Now it's everything. And forensics, you have to approach forensics on servers completely different than you do on desktops.
I knew what PowerShell and Active Directory.
Yes.
I was like, what? What's that?
There's permissions for things? Yeah. What is that?
Group policies? Yeah. What?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's very different. And you have to learn very much in an enterprise environment. There's all these different people that interact with these servers and different applications on servers, and there's a whole bunch of different people that own this stuff, and they're running their own PowerShell, and you've got to figure out, is this a threat actor or is this like the app owner? And so it's a lot more data and a lot more digging, I would say.
With things like zero trust, high trust, there's all the different trusts, or lack of, I should say, zero trust. Do you find, obviously it's made it better because of the tight controls, but when you're looking at remote employees, how have departments like that managed the difference between usability? Okay, you're no longer plugging into a specific port, you're going to be at home or you're going to be at Starbucks, let's be honest. And how are you playing the balance between these high-level security processes and additional?
For us, if you're on your company machine and you're not physically connected to the network at work, then you can't do anything without a VPN. So it's pretty quickly locked down. You're not going to access anything without going through the VPN. I think yours is even more regulated than mine.
Yeah, and I see a lot of, for us and even when we were responding to different clients and stuff in previous life, is you either have a work device, right? Because that's the thing, it's either a work device or it's your bring your own device environment. Bring your own device adds its own set of problems. But whether it be bring your own device or your company device, one of the ways that I see a lot of solutions that is, it's either, like Amanda said, signing in from a VPN, and therefore you're a trusted user. A lot of people are going to, a lot are even going to VPN always on, right? Solutions that is, it's either, like Amanda said, signing in from a VPN, and therefore you're a trusted user. A lot of people are going to, a lot are even going to VPN always on, right? Even if you plug in at work, it's VPN always on to get into it. But the other part is if it's bring your own device, well, a lot of companies are going to VDIs. And so even if you're on your own device, the only thing that you can connect to is you still have to connect to that virtual environment. And that virtual environment, you're not getting things out of it. So I think that's kind of a better way that a lot of people are going, like you said, Amanda, is go to the cloud, right? Is if you've got remote workers, that's the other thing. Is how do we ship a computer out to them, or how do we get it back if they quit, or they're fired, or whatever case may happen. We've got this $3,000 machine that's sitting out there somewhere we want back. Well, if we issue out VDIs, we can just cut those off whenever we need to, spin up a new one, and it's a lot more controllable with that. So
here where they issue us managed machines, I'm like, I can't even put an app on my
computer. Delete the shortcuts off your desktop.
Man, thing for me.
That's
it's
so
different.
Hard to adjust. Yeah. And then, like you said, where we have to, explain our case on why we need to have this, the ability to have these computers for, like, my training classes. I need to be able to install Imgur. Yeah,
yes.
You need administrative privileges to do that. So that was really hard for those IT guys. I'm like, why? We can do it right here. We can do it. No, I don't have the ability to do it. So that was a lot of, back and forth until I think we both settled, right? I think there's
some middle ground.
Middle ground, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my company issued machine is very strongly regulated. My forensic machine, of course, never connects to the company network, so I don't have to worry so much about the things that go on that, but the company laptop I can't really do much on.
Yeah, and we're the same way as our forensic machines, they they're not an approved device, so they don't have the VPN on, they can't connect to the network, anything of that. But even from that side, it is a little different where I have to get approved, and rightfully so, get approved the software I'm going to put on it, because you start worrying about stuff like the EULAs, right?
Yeah. And
law enforcement, a lot of the free software we put out there, it's the EULAs, if you're using it for law enforcement or not a corporate purpose, then you can use it as an individual person. Well, now I'm a corporate entity.
You lost that ability to use that software.
Yeah, so right? Now you have to buy it, and so there's a lot of that, and making sure the updates happen and everything. So
vulnerability scans.
Right. So even if it's not a device that's connecting to the network, if it's a device that essentially we're putting our name to and say we're using for some type of business function, there's other considerations that you didn't think about that in law enforcement.
Yeah.
So to kind of start to wrap it up, we've kind of gone through various stages of investigation, bouncing around. Reporting is kind of where, even in the corporate world, how do your reports, if they do, differ from what you're doing now versus how you wrote a report when you were doing law enforcement-based investigations?
My reporting's totally different. So law enforcement, I could easily have a 50-plus page report that I did because I had to explain so far down to get understanding. Now things just go like in the security ticket, and everybody in IT kind of knows what I'm talking about. So I don't have to be really as detailed. A little more when it comes to, you know, actual forensics artifacts that they're not used to having to dig in. But it's so one little piece, you know, it's just this part of a security incident, and I don't have to, I can look at one day as opposed to looking at an entire machine's history all the way back, like
you
I did with law enforcement.
You don't need to put all the stuff, the drive geometry. And
yes, none of that.
I validated this tool prior to using it.
We don't have to do any of that. So the reporting, I would say, is easier.
I would agree it's easier, too, and it's faster as well because, even though we know what happened at one instance, what we used to investigate, usually wasn't the first time that occurred, right? So you're trying to get the history of it. Well, that's what surprised me the first time going from law enforcement to corporate is they said, hey, we think the breach happened on August 4th at 10:08 a.m. So can you look like 24 hours before and see if there's anything happened? And you just look 24 hours before? Nope, okay, we're looking at this 15-minute time window.
Yeah, that's
what happened in 15 minutes? And then you're just... You know, and a lot of it too isn't everything in law enforcement was paragraph form. It was full blown reports. You go in here and it's timelined of it's actually breaking out the technical aspect of this is when this happened, this is when this happened, and it's very much bullet pointed instead of paragraph form.
Attorneys like their words.
Right.
And if you're an attorney listening, I love you.
corporate is so much more log based too, for sure. Don't get me wrong, I used event logs in law enforcement, but not like I do now. Yeah. It's insane the amount of, or even maybe the lack of logging that happens. So you're looking at logs a lot more.
I think my knowledge in that is growing as well, because teaching you guys like you, I'm like, hey, this is what this tool did when I was in law enforcement, and then maybe the class prior, one of my corporate people that's in banking or whatever said, hey, this is how I use it. Well, that's how I'm going to teach it then. So I have examples for each side of, our students, which is nice. I've learned a lot, too.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about forensics. And honestly, that's what's awesome about switching over to law enforcement is, Amanda, like you said a minute ago, is you were the subject matter expert going in, and it's actually kind of nice going into environments and you're not the smart person anymore. It's nice to go in and say, I have all this I can learn.
Yeah.
And it makes it enjoyable because if you're not, if you're not learning, move on and find something else to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why I love this field, right? Is there's always something new to learn. There's always some new tool, tip and trick. And like law enforcement, right? It was a game where, the suspect goes out and tries to find some new way to commit a crime, and we investigate and find a way to do it. Well, threat actors are always trying to find some new way to get the data they want, and we're finding ways to identify and close that gap. And so it's a lot of fun.
I can definitely say that when I went into law enforcement, like in 2007, I had no idea that I would be here. So the way things have evolved is definitely interesting and and exciting too.
Right.
I think digital forensics is still a young enough field that most of us are in some form or fashion that way still. Well, I never expected to be in forensics or here. It's a and maybe a lot of fields are that way, but I think especially forensics, I did in a way, but it was, I started to go to just be a police officer and then got diverted into it very early on. But a lot of us go in to be a police officer, now you're working for a bank, now you're working for Blue Shield, now you're working for a software company, and you're like, what? How did I get, you know, like, how did it end up in this spot? But as the stuff we've talked about, you learn how to learn, you learn this new tech, you learn how to be flexible, how to...
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said you got to constantly learn. You know, you got to make yourself continue to learn, you know, that read a blog post or take a class. Like you just said something about ethical hackers. My last class last semester was ethical hacking.
Yes.
So I'm still working, almost got my master's degree in cybersecurity. But if you stop, then you can get stale.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that a lot. You know, we see, you know, the worst thing I want to do, or I want the people that work for me, is I don't want them to teach old stuff.
For sure.
So I don't want them to be stale. And so if I'm trying to stay on top of it, I want them to try to stay on top of it so that, you know, our students get fresh material, or at least, you know, as fresh as possible, you know. So that's my hurdle of making sure our curriculum, you know, evolves with our tool.
I think that's another way law enforcement, like you were saying, you really like to hire law enforcement. I think we're just very inquisitive people naturally. And I think that really lends itself well into tech, because you just, you're wanting to find something all the time. And so it keeps you kind of on the edge.
Yeah.
Chris, Amanda, thanks for coming in. Anything you want to add on the way out?
Appreciate the opportunity. It's been great.
No, thanks for taking time out of your week.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I can always talk about forensics.
Well, then we'll have to do a sequel next time we're down. So thanks, Dan, for joining me.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk to you again.
Appreciate it.